My name is Turbo. I just wanted to go a little faster.
With my brains and your speed, we should be destined for greatness.
The Indy 500.
This is ridiculous.
A snail cannot race in a competition meant for cars.
Wow. Aren't you just a little ray of sunshine?
And that's a clip from Turbo, an animated kids' comedy about a snail's dream to win the Indy 500. Though the movie did not do as well as studios had hoped, one ecologist thinks it failed on an entirely different level. Accuracy. Fictional talking snail aside, Marlene Zook argues that Turbo is another example in a long line of movies that misrepresent the biology of the animal kingdom. Marlene Zook is an evolutionary biologist and behavioral ecologist and currently teaches at the University of Minnesota. Her recent opinion piece in the LA Times, Animals to Hollywood, Get It Right, discusses the egregious errors filmmakers make when it comes to animals. Marlene, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
So how did Turbo misrepresent snails?
Snails are really cool animals, and never mind the business about them being slow, and as you say, never mind about them talking, but snails, instead of being male the way Turbo is portrayed in the movie, are actually hermaphroditic. They have the sex organs of both sexes. And it's not that I think that movies have to be accurate in the sense that we should have detailed anatomical discussions about every animal we see. But I think that often animals end up being portrayed in a way that makes us miss out on a lot of what's really cool about nature.
So in the urge to anthropomorphize, to sort of give human attributes to snails, it's not just the very humanness that we're giving them, it's the kind of lack of animalness.
Yeah, it's like we're assuming that everything is like a person. And I think it particularly irks me when people do that about the sex of animals in fictional portrayals, because if you look at most TV shows or movies about animals, it's like they act like females don't exist, that all of the world's snakes and tigers and bears and penguins are all boy snakes and tigers and bears and penguins. It's particularly egregious when they do that about social insects like ants and bees. And I study insects, and it's one of the most basic things you learn is that all of the wasps and bees and ants that you see out there interrupting your picnic or going into your sugar bowl or flitting harmlessly from flower to flower are all female. And ignoring that is not just a little, oh, well, you know, we make lots of errors on movies, but it means that you're missing something that's really basic and really exciting about what animals do.
Never mind making mistakes. I mean, these things are fictional, right?
Oh, yeah. And I have had people point out, oh, lighten up. These are talking animals. Talking about whether or not snails are hermaphroditic is really sort of beyond the point. But I do think that there's a way that you can have fiction and have fictional and fantasy animals and still be really true to the essence of nature. A great example is Isabella Rossellini, the actress has a series of short films about animal mating and animal behavior. There was one series called Green Porno and one Seduce Me, and then most recently she has one on animal motherhood, which I got to help consult on, called Mamas. She herself is in all these outrageous costumes being portrayed as a mother hamster who eats her babies or a mother spider whose babies eat her. So obviously we all know that spiders don't look like Isabella Rossellini. I mean, think of what the world would be like if spiders really looked like Isabella Rossellini. You know, I mean, our whole society might be different. In any event, it's not like I think, oh no, everything has to be a documentary. But if you make all animals seem like people and seem like people of a particular kind and don't pay any attention to what animals are really like, it's like you're homogenizing what nature really is. And in my opinion piece, I also talk about it's not just getting the sexes right. Don't put animals in environments that either all look alike or that aren't really true to where they occur. People in Hawaii often think, oh, well, you know, isn't this a place with monkeys and macaws and some other tropical thing along with plumeria? And the answer is no. The tropics in Hawaii look really different than the tropics in South America or the tropics in Africa or the tropics in India. And understanding all of the nature of those differences is, I think, what makes looking at animals much, much more interesting than just seeing them as, oh, you've got a little talking squirrel. It could be a little talking person, but we're just going to make it a squirrel to make it a squirrel.
Well, oftentimes the stories revolve around characters being out of their element, penguin sunning on a tropical beach or a bunch of zoo animals suddenly free and stuck on Madagascar can be funny precisely because people know the characters are out of place. Right.
Oh, yeah. And there's ways to do this where I think that there's fiction that works really well. One of the things I always really liked is in Finding Nemo. Do you remember the gulls who kept screaming, you know, mine, mine,
right.
mine? And I thought that was perfect. Anybody who looks at gulls, you think, you know, yeah, that probably, if they could talk, that is what they would say. That seemed really in keeping with their personality. So, you know, again, it's not like I'm suggesting that we should all only have documentaries and that those documentaries all have to be minutely detailed so that we get all the things right. But I think sometimes when we personify animals too much, we miss out on the really cool part.
There is a test that's applied to Hollywood films to determine if a movie gets fair representation to women. It's called the Bechdel test. So I guess you've designed one of your own and set out some basic ideas. What are they?
Yeah, and the Bechdel test, I should hasten to point out, and we should probably tell people what that is because it in itself is an interesting one to apply to fictional representations of people, which is that if you look at a movie or a TV show, that you should take note of three things. One is, does it have at least two female characters? Do they talk to each other as opposed to the men in the movie? And do they talk to each other about something other than men? And it's actually quite remarkable how few films will pass this test. Even films that seem like they've got lots of women characters, often the women's characters are centered around the men. So my first rule really is to get the sexes right. And I feel that this is a modest requirement. You know, it's really not something that should be that controversial. And I just feel like...
Well,
you know,
but there's a question for Hollywood. How do you portray hermaphrodite?
Oh, don't you think that would be hugely fun? I think there could be all kinds of really cool stuff in there. You could have sort of this ambiguity. You could have a snail where it could have one of these kind of androgynous names where you couldn't quite tell, you know, like Pat, remember that old...
Yes,
character?
Of course, on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, so you could have, you know, an androgynous name, and it could do these things. And it would be really interesting because kids often have very fixed ideas about gender identity, and I think it would be a hugely fun thing to play with in a movie. So the first one is get the sexes right. The second one is to stop misidentifying animals and avoid what we biologists call taxonomy failure. So taxonomy, of course, is the way we classify things, and whether you call something a lizard or a snake or a spider or, you know, what have you. And it's remarkable, again, how often people make big mistakes about this. It's also our person-centeredness. So we think, oh, yeah, insects and spiders are kind of the same thing, but actually they're separated by millions of years of evolution. They haven't had a common ancestor in a really long time. And the third one is to make the background match the animal. Stop showing penguins living in the Arctic. Stop showing macaws in Hawaii. Because, again, I think that when you do that, you end up kind of homogenizing and you make like a generic sort of McTropics or McDesert where people think the world is all the same, you know, within broad confines of, oh, there's tropics or, oh, there's desert. And you appreciate a lot more when you get some of the details right. Mm. And the last thing is that, you know, again, I do understand that, you know, I'm a biologist, so I see the world maybe a little bit differently than some other people. But there's mistakes and then there's mistakes. What would we say about a movie that was a sports movie where you showed a bunch of basketball players going to play a game with a soccer ball? I mean, you wouldn't end up saying, oh, it doesn't really matter because, you know, they're still playing with a ball and we don't really care. You'd say, geez, who made a stupid mistake like that? And so it seems to me a little bit of that, really, don't those people know any better, could be applied to stuff with animals.
Marlene Zook, an evolutionary biologist and behavioral ecologist currently teaching at the University of Minnesota. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You can find a link to her recent opinion piece in the LA Times, Animals to Hollywood, Get It Right. We do have a link to more at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. Coming up, an aging rodeo queen and rancher refuses to hang up her boots. We'll hear that story when Word of Mouth continues.